RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend at UFC on ESPN 11. We're going to tell you our top three takeaways from the event, which I'm pretty sure you probably know what takeaway number one is. We're going to talk about our three stars of UFC on ESPN 11, plus some other topics. Also, we're going to talk about the return of Bellator as we do this show. We don't know exactly when it's going to be, but a lot of rumblings out there, potentially sometime in July. So we're going to talk about the top five fights we want to see when Bellator does return to live competition. And then we're going to wrap up the show by talking about Saturday's UFC on ESPN 12. And we got two questions we're going to debate about. One is outside of the main event, what are our top three fights? And which debuting fighter interests us the most? So, Daniel, man, it's an interesting time in my world, Daniel. We're now, if I go out to a public place here in Tampa, you got to have a mask on. So it's a changing world, man.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, that has been the constant theme of 2020 is it feels like every week is a month and every month is a year, and things change so drastically in so many different industries. And we are in similar territory in the place that I live in. I would imagine where I live, a little bit of a smaller population, but a big nonetheless. And here, you must wear a mask basically anywhere. I mean, I'm a training professional wrestling, and whenever we have trained this past week, we literally have trained with our masks on. It was quite difficult, but, you know, following county rules, and yes, the numbers have been quite crazy in terms of the amount of individuals that tested positive for COVID-19, but that's a pretty big difference for you, right? This is the first time that your area has been asked to do this, correct?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was always obviously a voluntary thing before. And dude, I couldn't imagine trying to work out with a mask on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did it with a cover, like one of those, like you're going out fishing. I decided to try that. And after I washed it the first day, God, it smelled so bad the second training. So it did not interact well, but it is a lot harder. But we still did what we normally do, maybe at a slower pace. And obviously, once we got outside, we would all like get really far away from each other and take our mask off and just inhale the oxygen because we needed it. But probably a slower pace, but it's one of those things where you really want to do something, you're going to do it regardless. And yeah, it's just, you know, we're listening to the restrictions, but it's like one of those things where those hardcore restrictions make sense for most things. But, you know, obviously, if you're deciding to still work out or wrestle or whatnot, I mean, you're basically trusting the individual that you're doing it with that, you know, they've socially distanced in other aspects of their lives. And, you know, it's one of those things where this will probably be one of the most memorable portions of our entire lives, Jason. Like when we are 85 years old, I mean, this is our, I mean, I hope to God this is the most notable thing we experience. I mean, I hope it's not like in 2030 the Martians invaded. You know, it could certainly elevate as it's possible, but this has definitely been like just an outlandish, crazy, everything you name a year.
Yeah, where I live in Tampa, we're like a hot zone right now. It was this chart I saw the other day, just how much, you know, the cases here have skyrocketed. And, you know, I mean, look, it's the only thing that's tough for me in wearing the mask is as someone who wears glasses, whether you're breathing through your mouth or your nose, sometimes the glasses can get a little steamy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a common. I mean, I wear contacts and glasses, and anytime I want to go to the store and buy like some candy or a Coke or maybe some beer for the UFC on this past weekend, I'm always got my glasses on, and it's just a constant, you know, every 5 seconds you gotta wipe it down and expose your midsection to the public. But yeah, you know, that's one of those things, man. And it's just oh man, I can't wait. So we're just talking and we don't have any crazy things going on in society. It's probably gonna be a long time though, maybe a whole year.
That was one of the more interesting things from Dana White during his post-fight press conference, where, you know, someone asked a question basically like, you know, hey, are you planning for, you know, when you could have, you know, fans back? And Dana's response was, he goes, well, I'm actually planning for if we have another shutdown where we can't do events, which I thought was pretty interesting from Dana's part. And I mean, that's the thing, you know, who knows when fans are going to be back in attendance. But, you know, overall, I mean, as I think about all these UFC events, you know, they've been enjoyable fight cards. And sign me up for the smaller cage, man. Sign me up for a smaller cage. I think it's brought us some great action. But, you know, as we think about last week's fight card and our top three takeaways, I think it's very clear what the takeaway, number one takeaway from this. And of course, it's been the hottest topic in MMA since Saturday night. And that's what's happening in the opening fight of Austin Hubbard getting the TKO win at the end of the second round over Max Roscoff, who I hope I didn't butcher his last name. That's why I've been trying to always call him Max, because I'm not quite confident in saying his last name, Daniel. But you know, I've taken in a lot of things over the past couple of days, and this is why I love the fact of us doing the show on a recording on a Tuesday afternoon. It does allow us some time to, you know, I know we live in a society where it's about, hey, let's have that hot take now, but now it kind of gives you a couple of days to sit back, reflect on everything, and I don't think my opinion has changed, but it's been good to sit back and listen to how other people perceive it, not just you know, people involved in the situation, but you know, people in the industry, whether we are talking about a coach, a fighter, a media person, your average, you know, person. You know, one of the comments I saw that I took, you know, was interesting to me was Deron Wynn, the UFC middleweight, where he said, and this was on Instagram, he goes, quote, "As a coach, I want a dude who is going to look out for my safety, but more importantly, push me when I feel like I'm quitting. Max is a top-of-the-line athlete. His health wasn't in danger. Fight was 1-1 going into the third. He hit a wall and had a mental speed bump. We have all been in situations like that when we make the wrong decision when we are tired. Generally, after you gain your energy back, you immediately regret your decision. You may due to fatigue. I think the MMA world has fallen in love with overreacting on corner decisions. I don't know the guy personally, but I want a guy like Drysdale in my corner every time. In my opinion, he made the right decision by trying to push his athlete to the next level." And look, I understand where Deron Wynn is coming from. There, the one point that I feel like, and I listened to Drysdale's interview with Ariel, and I give Robert a lot of credit, because I don't know how many people in this world would be as open as he has been since Saturday. And I think one of the things I will note, I went back and I watched that sequence at the end. And at the end, Drysdale does tell the inspector that Max is done. That was one thing that I wasn't clear on initially, but after going back on it, Drysdale did tell the inspector that his fighters was done, because the inspector was asking Max if he wanted to continue to fight. But to me, Daniel, the one point that I believe people are not talking about is the point of how this situation looked for the common sports fan sitting on their couch when you have an athlete say at least 9 times, maybe as much as 11 times, that he doesn't want to compete anymore.
Yeah, for anyone watching that clip on the broadcast, it looked bad. I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, I'm not ready to completely eviscerate Robert Drysdale. But I still think he did a bad job in that corner. And the reason being is, yes, you're trying to push your athlete, but there are some athletes who mentally can check themselves out of fights. You know, like they can literally, the mental game is a very difficult thing. Some people are just way more confident mentally, and some people can lose it mentally. I'm someone who loses it mentally. And it's important to have a coach that understands the fine line between motivating and listening. And he should have listened to Max way earlier, because the big what if is maybe after the 7th time Max told him he's done, he got tired of his coach telling him to keep on fighting and he accepted, okay, fine, let me go fight. So what if Robert actually persuaded Max to fight? Round 3 starts and Max gets obliterated. That is what could have happened because of Robert's actions. And so that's why I will criticize Robert Drysdale, is even though the fight did stop, he tried so hard to get Max back in that fight. And the thing is, after the first or second time of Max with his eyes to the ground saying, I can't do it, I believe he should have listened to him, because had he gone out round three, I think he would have been mentally checked out, and I think he would have got finished, and there would have been more damage. I think when a professional fighter is telling you, I can't go, I would absolutely compare this to when I train professional wrestling. And what I would compare it to is I'm someone who's kind of mentally weak when it comes to more of the high-risk moves. I get really scared of doing like suplexes and stuff where I'm doing front flips, and I need to take a lot longer of approach. At a normal wrestling school, the coach will tell me to, you know, quit being a wimp and do it. And I would, when I'm just mentally checked out, I could try and do it and I'll land on my head because I'm mentally checked out and I hurt myself. And my trainer took his time with me. And when I said I can't do it, he gave me a day to come back. And eventually I actually did do the move. So that's what I would bring to the table, Jason, is that it's important to understand everybody's different. And when somebody's mentally checked out, they're mentally checked out.
Look, Drysdale is going to know how to get the most out of Max because he has been around him, you know, for several years. And the one thing about Max is this is a guy that a lot of people were looking at, obviously, with his grappling ability. But one of the things that I have seen so many people talk about is they'll say it was tied 1-1. That's fake news, bro. It was not tied 1-1 on the judges' scorecards. It was 20-17 on one score, another score also at 20-17, and the third judge had it 19-18, all for Austin Hubbard.
Yeah, that was a 10-8 round. I mean, the way round two ended, Hubbard controlled and dominated that second half. I mean, you could say that watching that fight, Max quit through that round. And to me, the big ingredient was just the cardio was there. And I guess another thing to look at is, and Max is a guy who, unfortunately, this will be his reputation. It's going to take a lot. I mean, think about it. Rarely do we ever start the podcast talking about the first fight that took place on a fight card. Sometimes we will not even talk about those fights. It won't be one of the big stories. So it sucks for Max that this is the number one story coming out of Saturday night's card. So this is a huge reputation shaker, and it sucks because he was a big time prospect with the really interesting wrestling credentials, and it's going to be a big time road back to change the perception. I mean, that's the type of embarrassment that some guys might just leave the sport for reals. Like that's embarrassing. And I hope he comes back and I feel bad for him. And again, I don't want to completely eviscerate Robert. I understand what he was doing, and that's a coach's role. I'm just saying, like, you know, some athletes are different. And sometimes when people are out, they're out, and they just can't get back in the driver's seat because they're scared or tired. And I think that was the case of Max. Now, the thing is, it also kind of speaks to, and by the way, great performance by Austin Hubbard. Poor guy, a former LFA champion, went out there, had a solid win, fending off the wrestling. Let's not forget about that. Austin was good, Jason.
No, you're spot on with that. I mean, look, I understand where Drysdale is coming, but as I said, I think that one of the things that I believe that people are not looking at is for the common fan that was tuning in on Saturday late afternoon, you know, here in Tampa, you know, that fight took place just a little after 5 o'clock, you know, first round. I mean, look, Max went for it, you know, and there was, when he had both of Austin's legs on the ground, I thought he was going to get the submission win. And I picked Max to win the fight, you know, cause I thought he'd be able to get the fight to the ground, but look, he didn't have the gas tank for him. And then it was very clear about, you know, 2 minutes into the second round, it was just like, well, I got this fight wrong. I mean, that was my mindset. And I don't know why people sending him out for the third round. I just think we were going to see more of what we saw in the second round. And look, I do feel that there could be multiple people to put the blame here. And I saw this tweet from Brett Okamoto on Sunday. I saw it on Sunday. He posted it on Saturday night where he said that he spoke to Max's manager, Brian Butler of Sucker Punch Entertainment. This was the quote about asking about an update on his health after he could not continue. And this is Brian Butler's quote. And I want to get your opinion on this, Daniel. Max suffered from fatigue due to short notice weight cut and pre-existing turf toe, was not able to overcome both. He will take time off to heal up. Daniel, the manager signs up his fighter for a short notice fight on 5 days notice, and he knows he's injured.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big question to have because the thing is, as a manager, you want to get your fighter in the UFC, right? Like, that's the ultimate goal, is we're going to get you on the big stage. I believe in you, and you're going to be a top fighter. And so often, the introduction for you, for a mixed martial artist into the UFC, is the short notice replacement. You know, maybe if you tell the UFC no today, they won't be calling back tomorrow. There's a lot of outward pressure there. But in this situation, this ended up being a major, major, major negative on the career of Max, because this is a guy who would have gotten to the UFC, and because he felt he took this fight, he is now a fighter with a reputation like this. This is a really bad reputation to work himself through. And also, geez, that's got to be so tough mentally. So I think with the benefit of hindsight, it was a mistake to take this fight, even though I really believe most managers would have who would have agreed to this, because I just think that's the pressure of the sport. And the unfortunate thing is, and it's kind of, it's a lesson as a manager. Maybe you got to understand when it's the right time to say no to the UFC for your fighters, for sure. Because if a guy's hurt, and if it's a 5-day, and you know it's going to be a tough weight cut, either negotiate a catch weight or don't take the fight. And the last thing that I want to, you know, bring up with my response here is something I was going to get to in my previous response, was not only is this on the manager, this is kind of an institutional problem with what has been going on with these shows, is that Dana White has really put a lot of pressure, or whoever it is, whoever made a decision to run a fight card every single week within these circumstances, has really put a lot of pressure to produce, because they're going to do a fight card every single week under tough circumstances. And that means filling out a preliminary and a main card. And that has created an absurd amount of short notice, late replacement fights with hard weight cuts. And I believe personally that the rate of those types of fights has gone up in a big way. And unfortunately, that has come at the cost of fighters like Max Roscoff, who's just had an embarrassing performance.
You feel bad for Max, and you hope that he's able to recover. I did find it very interesting in the post-fight press conference that Dana White mentioned the fact that Brian Butler has been trying to get Max into the UFC. I believe he mentioned since he was 2-0, which one of the things about Dana White, Daniel, is he is very calculated in what he puts out in the public. I always say this is, and I'm very much along the same lines, is there has got to be a method to the madness. And to me, there's always a method behind what Dana White says publicly, you know, because he knows he can control the narrative. When in that post-fight press conference, he took the jab at Brian Butler, you know, he didn't mention Brian by name, but he said manager. I knew who he was talking about, because I had heard the same thing about Max, of how they were trying to get him into the UFC. Is this will likely put a strain on the relationship that Brian Butler has with Sean Shelby, because Sean Shelby is going to remember, hey, this guy, you were pushing on me, and I remember how things went against Austin Hubbard.
Yeah, I mean, for every story we hear about, you know, Bob Cook recommending Daniel Cormier to Scott Coker, there are the stories that we don't hear, except for this time we did, of the manager promising the world. And I guarantee you that happens a lot, you know, for fighters who don't even get signed, where they're like, oh, this guy's the best, you know, sign him, he is the best, and then they are not the best. And yeah, for every DC we had the other guy. But if you're a manager who can really build a reputation of, like, when I tell you I got a guy, I got a guy, that is just so valuable, because when you force a guy through and, you know, he sucks, you got a problem. But if you're an AKA guy, I mean, you have the reputation of Cormier, of Cain Velasquez, guys like that, especially those heavier weight guys that whatnot. So absolutely, I mean, it's very much, I mean, it goes back to one of the most basic stories we're told as a kid, Jason, the boy who cried wolf. I mean, that works its way out to this part of the business, and it become very public. And again, it wasn't the only thing Dana White was being calculated about in this post-fight press conference, Jason.
Oh, yeah. He's it's pretty much a weekly thing now. Take a crack at Bob Arum. I guarantee you, he's going to take a crack at Bob Arum later on this week. I think it's a extremely safe bet to say he's going to take a crack at him because, so UFC on ESPN number 11 averaged 912,000 viewers for the main card, 513,000 for the prelims, peaked at, I want to say it was 1.2 million at 10:12 Eastern time. So I've been during the co-main event, which obviously makes a ton of sense. So top ranked boxing followed the UFC on ESPN that night. Daniel, they drew 327,000 viewers. So safe bet. Dana White's going to take another crack at Bob Arum this
week.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, I watched that actually. I watched that. And I guess that kind of parlays into my takeaway. Let me tell you how I watched that. I had my friends over. They came over an hour after the main card started. So we watched it on delay. We got to the main event. My two friends who were over got really bored after round one. And we decided just to skip to live TV and watch boxing. I had to go and rewatch the main event because it was so boring. I felt guilty. I literally felt guilty that my friends were watching Curtis Blaydes and Alexander Volkov. It was just a very boring fight. So we ended up deciding to watch, you know, boxing in Mexico with mismatches and whatnot. And that's what we did for the next couple hours until they left. So I actually watched the boxing that took place. I had no idea who the hell was fighting. It just seemed like I was watching mismatches and it was particularly exciting. It was kind of weird. They put fans on the screen, but the main event was so boring. Like literally my friends could not watch it. And I mean, my big takeaway is Curtis Blaydes, man. He is starting to learn his role because afterwards he said, like, I'm going to embrace the role of the heel. And that's probably what he's going to have to do because his fighting style can be ratings just awfulness. He warned the fans before the fight started, right, Jason, on Twitter? Don't watch it. We probably shouldn't have because that fight was awful.
Here's the... And because I remember during the fight, I went and, went to UFCstats.com, which is where you can find all the UFC stats, in terms of, all from a fighter's fights in the UFC. So Saturday night was the 12th UFC fight for Curtis Blaydes. How many submission attempts do you think he's gone for?
Is it going to be like 8? What is it?
0.
No way. No way. No, in every fight he's never attempted a submission?
He has never attempted a submission in UFC competition. If you don't believe me, Daniel, go to UFCstats.com and just look at the history. You can just, the history of all his fights. The submission column's right there. It is a fat 0 in every fight.
Dude, that's the most amazing stat, bro. Like, he spends so much time on the ground. I mean, I wonder if today, as we speak, if he's already broken the record for most takedowns by a heavyweight in the history.
Oh, yeah. He had that record before the fight.
I figured, which is like actually kind of impressive when you think about it. Like, damn, he's going to set that record so far as he continues because he's freaking good. It's just like he's probably going to lose to Stipe and Ngannou, and he probably won't ever fight DC because obviously DC says he has one fight left. I wouldn't be surprised if he has like two, but I mean, one of them is not going to be against Curtis Blaydes. But like Blaydes is going to be around the UFC for a very long time. And he's going to win a lot of fights this way. I mean, he knows what he needs to work on in terms of, like, he could absolutely go out there and beat Ngannou and Stipe because he could absolutely lay on top of them. That's possible. It's unlikely he's going to be a dog. What he's got to work on is the cardio. He got tired big time into rounds 4 and 5. So those are some big issues. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, Curtis is going to be a fixture. I guess for him, he's got to watch out that he doesn't piss off Dana White too much because he just might not get re-signed by the UFC. Because that's certainly a possibility. I wouldn't be shocked, if Curtis finds himself in the territory we've seen with some of these like top level UFC fighters who, unfortunately, because their fight quality is boring and they just don't get re-signed. I think that's a real possibility for Blaydes.
It was one of those things of I forget what round it was, and because I remember it was a point he was on Volkov's back, and I'm sitting there going, oh my god, the rear naked is there, why is he not going for it? And you never see him. And I don't know the answer to this question, but it made me sit there and start to wonder whether I'm like, does this, I would imagine he trains jiu-jitsu, I would imagine he does, maybe it's just he's not confident in his abilities and he's just confident in his ground and pounding. And I was just sitting there going, Man, but it's a dominating fight. I mean, he dominated Volkov for three rounds. Volkov did absolutely nothing for three rounds. One of the funniest parts of the broadcast, Daniel, was as Volkov is making his walk to the cage, they are talking about how he has the best takedown defense in UFC heavyweight history. I'm like, come on, fellas. Come on. Look who he's gone against. He has not fought a wrestler.
Yeah, literally, let's look at the list. Alexander Volkov, who has he fought? Oh my gosh. Greg Hardy, Derek Lewis, Verdum, Struve, Nelson, Johnson. I mean, the only guy who wants to fight to the ground is Verdum, and Verdum did not wrestle in college, okay? He did a lot of jiu-jitsu, but yeah. I mean, that's one of those cherry-pick stats where it is correct, but I really think you need to, like, at the end of the day, no matter if you say it, that bell is going to ring. That horn is going to sound. And the reality of the situation is going to become quite evident. And it became evident. I mean, you know, Curtis is damn talented, man. I mean, there's no two ways about it. He's going to win most of his fights. He's a damn good wrestler. He certainly is very strong. I mean, there's a possibility he could finish a fight early with his power. But it's unlikely, I think, against these upper echelon guys. And yeah, I mean, I think you bring up one of the most intriguing points is just the lack of the literal lack, zero, no existence of submission attempts. That is a really astonishing factoid that could change the perception of how we think about Blaydes if he was able to finish these fights with rear naked chokes and whatnot. But the fact that he hasn't even attempted any, and there were opportunities, as you mentioned, it's quite a head scratcher. Because if he fought like that, I really do think the perception of Curtis would change. I mean, the thing is, being a quote-unquote heel as a boring fighter never really works. You know, the reason why people hate you, we've had guys who are wrestlers be bad guys. Colby Covington is the name that comes to the example. But people don't hate him because he's a wrestler. They hate him because he's a jerk and he says outlandish stuff. For Curtis, for the whole point of why people not liking you is because you're a boring fighter, that's a really hard thing to market.
And one of my top takeaways was related to Curtis Blaydes, and it was his weird spot in the UFC heavyweight division. We know that Miocic will have the trilogy matchup with Cormier. That's going to be at, I want to say, August 15th. Was announced by the UFC, what, a week, 2 weeks ago. And of course, you know, the other man in front of him in the rankings is Francis Ngannou, who he's already lost to twice. And Blaydes has mentioned about, you know, basically sitting out waiting for a title shot, which I'm like, man, I hope you've saved up a lot of money if that's your choice, because if so, good, you're going to be sitting on the sidelines for well over a year. So there's not, if Jairo Rozenstruik wins his next fight, I think that fight makes sense. But for Blaydes, he's in a really weird position where it's almost like, A, you're hoping that, I think the ideal scenario for Curtis Blaydes is A, Miocic beats Cormier. And B, Miocic says, you know what? I've already fought Ngannou. I want to fight the guy I haven't fought in Curtis Blaydes.
That is the that's what he's going to say. But the answer, the real reason is, I do not want to fight this man. Ngannou's scary. Let me fight anyone else. That's the real answer. Because, like, he's going to make a lot more money fighting Ngannou. So, yeah, those are the scenarios. Like, this dude's got to be praying for some dudes to get injured, because the thing is, he will not sit out and get a title shot with things going as planned. Dana White has no desire to put this man in a championship opportunity. I mean, he already pissed him off talking about fighter pay, and Dana kind of like did his usual Dana BS where he turned one tweet into like something else where he was like, you see, he's boring. Like, that's not what he was saying. He admits that he's boring, but that's another topic. But yeah, I mean, like, if you're Dana, there's no desire to put Blaydes in a title fight. So it's one of those deals where it's important to understand reality. And the reality is Curtis Blaydes is not a guy that the UFC wants to be UFC champion. So they're not even going to give him that opportunity unless he goes out there and earns it and overly earns it. Because that is the express way that he put himself in because of his fighting style.
It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I mean, I think that we all want to see Ngannou, you know, take on the winner of Cormier Miocic. Of course, we'll see what happens with Cormier. So, I've mentioned two of my top three takeaways. What's a takeaway that you have that we haven't discussed?
Yeah, okay, my takeaway would be God bless the old geezers. Man, the old geezers on this card really came through in entertaining fashion. It was a nice little sandwich of geezerdom. You know, I don't really think of Bobby Green as an old geezer. I mean, this is a guy who is 33 years old, but man, this is a fighter with nearly 40 professional fights. He's been in the UFC for a while now, and obviously Clay Guida is quite the old guy. I mean, he's had so many amazing fights with Diego Sanchez, and you know, the Roger Huerta fight was a great one as well, and so many. The Carpenter, I mean, he looks like, you know, a descendant of Jesus Christ almost. And the old geezers had a great fight to end the prelim card. It was an awesome fight. Great wrestling and slams from Guida. Green would battle back up and use his stand up. And it was just a really fun fight to watch with my friends. And then obviously that was followed up by Jim Miller in a catchweight against Roosevelt Roberts. You know, Jim Miller kind of being set up to potentially lose here against a youngster at 36 years old. This guy is a UFC legend in terms of like fight, you know, experience. I mean, he literally has 47 professional fights. His first fight was at UFC 89 in 2008. You know, it's been a long road for Jim Miller. He's actually struggled a lot, especially in 2017, 2018. But he looks great here, and he looked great against Roberts, especially on the ground, locking on that submission armbar. So my second takeaway is the geezer showed up with a great fight and a great performance.
In terms of Bobby Green, love what he said after the fight, where he said, quote, "You can't beat hate with hate. You beat hate with love. So everyone out there, please stop fighting. Please come together." I saw a lot of people that I follow in the sports world, you know, talking about that. So kudos to Bobby Green for that. And a clear decision win for him. I don't know what Bisping and Cruz are watching, thinking that Clay Guida can take a decision. They're talking about that on the broadcast. I'm going, what the hell fight are they watching? Do they not understand judging in this sport? Jim Miller, I mean, man, just crazy how long he's been in the UFC. And you brought up this topic of Jim Miller. Jim Miller, UFC Hall of Famer? My answer is no.
My answer is yes. And the reason being is eventually we're going to run out of guys. But the real answer is, like, I think when it's all said and done, the reason why he's going to be a UFC Hall of Famer is that he's probably going to end up with a record for the most wins in UFC history. That's a pretty big, I mean, right now he's tied for third, 20, so maybe he won't, but I mean, he has the most wins in lightweight history. He has had he's going to have so many records because of his quantity of fights. He's had so many great fights in the UFC, and he's been in the UFC for such a long time that I believe that's what earns him a shot in the Hall of Fame. But I mean, there's obviously a great case for him not to be in there, Jason.
Look, the UFC Hall of Fame is what it is. It's kind of tough to take it serious in a way. For me, Hall of Fame means you are the greatest of the greats. Like, look at football. The Football Hall of Fame is not run by the NFL. It is its own entity. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. To me, it is about only the greats of the greats should be in there. Jim Miller, very good fighter. Can't take any of that away from him. But there's obviously one thing that Jim Miller has never accomplished. Never been a UFC champion. Never fought a UFC title fight.
Yeah.
So for me, it is tough for me to sit there and say that longevity should get you in the Hall of Fame. Look, Jim Miller's done a lot of great things, but to me, he's just not a Hall of Famer because he never got to the top of the division.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, his best run was his initial run in the UFC when he pieced together a big time win streak and ultimately lost to Benson Henderson. That was going to be his one opportunity, I think, to challenge for a title. And he never was able to challenge for a lightweight championship. I mean, it's a great case for sure. I just, I'm someone who's more like, oh, let's let everyone in, you know? So, I mean, that's true. I mean, I tell you what, let me sidestep our topics real quick. I saw you do this on Twitter and I just want to hear what you got to say. I want you to get it off your chest. What's going on with you in the UFC rankings, Jason? I'm just curious. I feel like you were going off on the rankings on Twitter. And so I think that kind of relates to the Hall of Fame in that it's not like super respectable. So what do you want to get off your chest on the rankings?
I wouldn't say I want to get anything off my chest. What it is was, so I saw a tweet earlier today, this morning, and I'm guessing maybe the tweet got deleted. I was retweeting somebody else. It was talking about what was being sent to UFC rankings voter panels and about where fighters should be. And basically all I tweeted was, I said, you know, one time I was a voter in the UFC ranking system, haven't been a voter in several years. And after seeing what, you know, seeing what I just retweeted, I do not understand why anyone reporting on the sport feels good about being a voter in that. When I, full disclosure, when I had the opportunity to be a part of the rankings panel, I saw as a positive of, hey, maybe this can help grow my brand. That's just a straight up truth. And then when the UFC, it never went through, but when they started talking about that the Reebok pay would be associated with the ranking system, I said, nope, I'm done. Nope, I want nothing a part of that. Because if you're starting to tell me that I'm taking money out of fighters' hands, no thank you. It's just, look, and then I looked at, you know, some of the outlets that were a part of this. And then Jed Goodman sent me the names of the fighters that were, or excuse me, the reporters that were on it. And I think it was probably about 15, 20 names he sent me. I only knew 8 of the people.
Yeah, you've been around a long time and you pay attention to a lot of stuff. I mean, just to clarify, you're saying the UFC was emailing the people who rank suggestions?
It was Eric from My MMA News had put it out there. And let me just see if I can pull up his exact tweet. But it was crazy because I remember I'm friends with Eric on Facebook, and he kind of noted, he's like, well, maybe I'm going to be fired for being a voting member down the road. I'm trying to find the actual tweet. Oh, I hope he did it. He didn't delete the tweet, but it was a screenshot. So here it is. He goes, while everyone's questioning why Burgos dropped 4 spots, read the downside loss says what could happen if he lost Emmett. They suggest that Burgos could be removed from the ranking. So apparently this was something I'm guessing was sent to all the members before. So Josh Emmett, upside win. Low, with a win, Emmett should move up just 1 spot ahead of Frankie Edgar. Edgar is 1-3 in his last 4, and Emmett would be 3-1. In addition, Emmett's win over Burgos would be more impressive than Edgar's win over Cub Swanson. He would not pass Calvin Kattar, who is also 3-1 with a win over Shane Burgos. This is due to Emmett's loss being to Jeremy Stephens and Kattar recently beating him. So let me look at the downside on Burgos. Read that one for you. Hi. Although it seems harsh, with a loss here, Burgos should be removed from the featherweight rankings. He would be just 3-2 in his last 5 fights with a win coming against Cub Swanson. In that time, current number 16, Bryce Mitchell, is 4-0 with the best win over Charles Rosa, who at this stage of her career is not a huge step down from Swanson. Given that fact, Mitchell's better recent record would give him a better claim to be in the ranking spot. It's also worth noting that number 11 through 15 also have impressive recent records, with each having a winning streak of at least 4, with the exception of Jose Aldo, whose resume speaks for itself.
Bro, that's nuts. Yo, Bryce Mitchell's great and all, 4-0 in the UFC, and you know, someone they're trying to push, and I always can't stop thinking about his penis. But, dude, this idea, like, he's 3-2. Bro, he lost to Calvin Kattar and Josh Emmett. You know, he beat Swanson. He looked good against Amir Khani. You could say he's 3-2, or you could say he's 5-2 in the UFC. Or, excuse me, 6-2 in the UFC. That's a bunch of malarkey. But just to clarify, that's something they would send the rankers? Like, just like a guide on rankings? Is that what it is? That's weird.
And that's weird. And so Eric later tweeted this. He goes, let me clarify. I haven't actually received those from the UFC. A well-known MMA site assembles the panel and operates as a bridge between. They are the ones, to my knowledge, that create the briefing sheets. But we, media on the panel, are the ones who take blame for the rankings. I mean, look, at the end of the day, being on the UFC rankings panel, you just have to understand, you're just a promotional tool for the UFC and ESPN. That's the reality of it. And when I look at the list, and I feel like I know a lot of people who report on the sport, when I sit there and look at that list, and I'm like, I have no clue who that guy is. It's unfortunate for the situation. I mean, look, Shane Burgos is clearly one of the top 15, you know, 145 pounders in the world. You know, that fight was my number 2 takeaway, just because that was a great goddamn fight. I mean, you mentioned about having friends over. I'm sure your friends were absolutely loving that fight. I mean, look, Shane Burgos, bro, man, you got to learn some boxing defense.
That was a fight of the year contender. I mean, that was, I mean, there were a couple fights that happened whenever the whole pandemic happened. Probably should have wrote them down. But those are the other ones I would look at that were that Luke fight was pretty good. And there was another one that happened that was like, holy moly. But put this one on the list. I mean, Burgos and Emmett, this was a fight of the year contender, and the defense needs to be there. Yeah, Robert Emmett, man, I tell you what. Josh Emmett, excuse me. Dude, it's like he really snuck up on me because like his highlight reel is effing impressive, bro. It's effing impressive. The knockouts over Johnson and Bektik and Lamas and how hard he hits. You know, Josh Emmett, you look at him and you see a guy who's 35 years old and a guy who he just does not look like someone who's going to be your star. This guy needs, Josh Emmett needs to be put on an expressway to a title opportunity. Obviously not next, but he needs that big time fight because he has had success. A win over Lamas, a win over Johnson, and he took on Burgos, a guy who I picked to beat him. He beats him. Dude tore his ACL. It's a fight of the year contender, and he just deserves a big opportunity. I can't speak so highly. I mean, he called out the media afterwards, and I'll tell you what, it's justified. We need to be talking more about Josh M. We need to start talking about his abs, bro. His abs are good, man. There's some good abs, bro. And, I mean, I think he's just got to maybe grow out some hair, bro. I think it's the balding or something is why we slept on Josh Emmett. But I'm awake now. Josh, I'm sorry. You are awesome. I fully and totally am on the Josh Emmett bandwagon. To me, the best part about Josh Emmett is his striking is so exciting. He hits like a ton of bricks. And it's, you know, the defense wasn't there for Burgos, but the chin was. He nearly got finished in that third round.
God damn, that chin of Shane Burgos. Holy cow, he might have the best chin in all the UFC. Just, I mean, just crazy shots that he took. And it's just, I mean, look, and that's been Shane's fighting style of, hey, I'm willing to eat two to land three. I mean, some of those shots, it was amazing. And, you know, I didn't, when Josh Emmett was talking about the media, I was like, I really hadn't seen the media just kind of all down on him. Maybe it's more of a situation where he's just like, man, you know, all these people are picking against me, but man, just unbelievable performance. He's actually my number one star of UFC on ESPN. I don't know if you want to move over to the stars or not, I don't know if you had another takeaway.
Yeah, I'll give one last takeaway. We can move over to the stars. My last takeaway real quick is just, hey, Tisha Torres, she's really good. And I say that because this poor fighter, Tisha, she had lost four in a row, but three of those four losses were to Andrade, Janjacek, Zhang Weili, and then, of course, to Marina Rodriguez. These are some of the best in the division, and she was put in a place where she could have lost five in a row. But Tisha reminded us how talented she is. Ever since the Invicta days, she's been someone who has almost seemed destined to become a strawweight champion that hasn't panned out. But against Brianna Van Buren, Tisha Torres is someone I wanted to mention in the takeaways because she wasn't one of my stars, but I really think she's going to be a factor at women's strawweight. But yeah, to coincide with your take, the number one star for me is also Josh Emmett.
Yeah, just an amazing performance. Tisha Torres actually is my number two star. I mean, you know, she came in, it was amazing how big of an underdog she was in that fight. And I think you could definitely make the case that it was her best performance inside the octagon. She looked absolutely great in that fight. Big win for her. And my third star was Justin James, who steps up on 72 hours notice, you know, to take on Frank Camacho after Matt Frivola was pulled from the event, which also, I think that's kind of a little bit of a story that now Nevada is pulling fighters from the event, even if one of their cornermen, you know, tests positive for coronavirus, even if the fighter tests negative. I spoke to Justin James before we started doing this show and told me just a fabulous story about the Guitar Hero name, which really isn't his nickname, but kind of you can go over to MMAreport.com to check out the interview. But here's basically a short story of it. Back when his younger days in the sport, he would always have like a different theme he'd walk out to the fight with. And a night of drinking with the boys in college, they were playing Guitar Hero, and every time you lost a head-to-head, you had to take a shot. And then it got at the end of the night, basically someone dared him to come out with a Guitar Hero as next fight. Well, he did that, and I think it's probably going to stick there. But Justin James, man, just you talk about the opportunity of a lifetime for him, and he talked about after the fact where he said, you know, hey, I was close to retiring, and I talked to him about that. He said, man, you know, we talked about the highs and lows of sport, and, you know, I think there's plenty of guys who can relate to him, but, I mean, you take advantage of the opportunity, and he certainly did that. So for my three stars of UFC on ESPN 11, it's Josh Emmett, Tisha Torres, and Justin James.
Yeah, people got to check out that interview, man. The MMA Report on YouTube. You interview so many fighters coming off and heading into those fights, and can't wait to listen to that. I think those are some good stars, man. My two and three. My number two is Bilal Muhammad. Very, very under the radar welterweight at this point. All he does is win. He has now won 7 fights in his last 8, and it was a really entertaining contest against Lyman Good. He got the victory. It wasn't a finish, but It's worth noting this dude is 17-3 and deserves a step up in competition. And it also, you know, his dad's shop, I believe, got pretty messed up. And so I just wanted to give him a shout out. And then my number three star, just because I wanted to spread the love, I wanted to talk about different fighters. I wanted to put Jillian Robertson as my number three because I really feel like Jillian Robertson is a name to watch in the women's flyweight division. I think if she strings together victories, maybe 2 more, she could find herself across the cage from Valentina Shevchenko, which may not be, that's not a great place for her to be. I mean, Shevchenko's going to run through anyone in that division, but she had a really nice win over Courtney Casey, who's just a real battle-tested veteran who's had her fair share of fights in the UFC and been around quite a while here. I mean, you know, Casey's been in the UFC for like over 10-plus fights, and Jillian Robertson was able to put her away with the finish.
You know, when it comes to Bilal Muhammad, I think the key thing for him is going to be is finishing fights. I mean, you know, he has a, you know, it's a guy that typically does go 15 minutes. So I think that's the thing with him. But yeah, man, he's put on a great run. You know, he mentioned about Santiago Ponce Nibulo after the fight. And, you know, that's getting, you know, some guy, you know, a guy that's been high ranked in the division, you know, for a long time. Santiago is not even in the rankings right now. And I'm sure that's more due to inactivity than anything else. But yeah, it was, you know, I mean, this is the thing is sometimes with these UFC fight night cards, they may not be the most exciting on paper, which we'll talk about Saturday's card here in a little bit. But for the most part, Daniel, these fight cards deliver. But the other big promotion in our world is Bellator. And, you know, Bellator has been pretty quiet. The most you pretty much hear out of Bellator is, you know, to check out their re-airs on Bellator's YouTube channel, which sometimes I don't necessarily understand why some of the fight cards they choose to re-air there. I would love to see maybe some of the older Bellator fights, but it's definitely most of the more recent ones. But you know, there's been a lot of rumblings about potentially Bellator coming back in July, and it makes you think about, you know, what are the top 5 fights we want to see? And so I will tell you, so I went to the Bellator website and started looking at fighter names. I went over to Tapology, look at the fights that were canceled. So I ended up coming up with 7 fights. So I'll give my 2 honorable mentions, and I'm 99% sure one of my fights, Daniel, you won't have in your list. That fight, Fabian Edwards versus Castelo Vanstinas.
Yeah, 100% did not have that fight on my list. Hype me up about this fight.
That is, Fabian Edwards, I think, has a potential to be one of the top 185ers in Bellator. You know, I think primarily because he's fought on those European shows that people haven't paid attention to. Of course, the brother of Leon Edwards. And Vanstinas, I think, it was a fight that was supposed to take place on the London show that was going to be headlined by Gallagher and Cal Eleanor, but obviously that fight card did not happen. So that's Fabian Edwards is a name to pay attention to. It was a great signing by Bellator to get him into a long-term promotional deal. And my other honorable mention, this may be a fight, Daniel, in your top 5, and that's Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson too.
That's my number 4. That's my number 4 fight. I'm looking forward to seeing what you don't have in your I'm looking forward to see what you do have in your top 5. I feel like you are more you're gonna put some fights out there that I didn't even consider, but I mean, right, like we have to have the same number 1 fight, right? Like it's obviously the number 1 fight is Lima Musasi, right? There's nothing else that's more exciting than that middleweight championship opera fight, right?
No, totally agree. That was my number 1 fight. I'll say this about my top 5 list. Four of the five matchups were previously announced by Bellator.
Yeah, all five of mine were. I'm looking forward to see what you got. All five of mine were. One other note I wanted to bring up when I was going through the Bellator website, it's just so it's so crazy to see. But when you click on Bellator, you click on fighters, and you click on world champions, it's so crazy to see that they only have five quote-unquote world champions. You know, I know Ryan... You know, I know Ryan Bader has two of the championships. I know, Patricio Pitbull. But it's just crazy. You have all these divisions, and at the end of the day, when you click on world champions, Lima, Cyborg, Bader, McFarland, Pitbull, that's it.
So let me go with... So my number five fight was a fight that has not been booked, but I know definitely one side of the fight definitely wants this fight. And if you tell me these two guys are fighting wherever... I'm in front of my television set watching this fight. Michael Pays versus Lorenz Larkin.
Oh yeah, bro. That's a good fight. I mean, that's like one of those things where it's like those are the type of fights I want to see Michael Pays in, bro. So I didn't have that one because it wasn't booked. That's your number two fight or your number five?
Number five.
Number five. Okay, my number five. Tell me if you have this one. It's Pitbull versus Carvalho. I mean, do you have that one in your top five or no?
I do not.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, I understand why you don't, because it's not super compelling. It's like it's a fight that I want to see because I want to see greatness. And Patricio Pitbull exemplifies greatness for me. I mean, I think we've discussed this quite often. I believe he's the best fighter in Bellator history. So when given the opportunity, I want to see the best fighter in Bellator history. So that's why that fight is number five on my list.
Yeah, that is not a fight that I had in there just because I think that's a, you know, Pitbull. I mean, there's a reason it's not that. I mean, I think he's going to easily get past him. My number four fight, I'm guessing, is in your top five. Sanchez versus Vichel.
No, that would be my quote-unquote honorable mention. Sanchez-Vichel is much more compelling as a contest than Patricio. It's just that I feel like whoever wins that fight is going to, you know, I just Pitbull's my guy. Like, I want to see him fight. But that's obviously an interesting contest. What's got your fancy up about that fight?
I just think it's, you know, it's a rematch. And I think it's just going to be a very fun and competitive fight. The fact that it's going to be five rounds, I think, plays into Emmanuel Sanchez's hands. I think it would be a very technical fight. I don't think I see one guy sitting there and wiping him apart. You know, I just think it's going to be a very technical fight.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fight that is going to be quite good and quite interesting. You know, and that reminds me of my number three fight, which has to be in your top five. I think we're going to get a little intersecting here. Because, again, my number four is Chandler and Harrison, Henderson. My number three fight is Bader Nemkov for the light heavyweight championship.
That is my number three fight.
Okay. So, I mean... This is might be as good as it gets, Jason, when it comes to fighters challenging for Ryan Bader's championship. I think Nemkov might be as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a great fight. I don't know how many people will give Vadim Nemkov a big opportunity to win that fight, but man, I think he can win that fight. I mean, that to me is a great fight. My number five is Paige Larkin, four Sanchez Weichel, three Bader Nemkov. Number one, we've already mentioned, for me is Lima Musasi.
We have the same two. We have number two. It's the same one. We can say it at once. I mean, what is it, Jason? What's your number two?
AJ McKee versus Darren Caldwell.
100%, bro. It's like you have your one, your two, and boom. That's, I mean, Lima Musasi, McKee Caldwell. Holy smokes, that's a great fight. I love that fight so much because it's like McKee is the big time prospect. Caldwell's the prospect killer. That fight is just dynamite.
Yeah, it's just an amazing fight. I mean, it's, you know, especially when you think about, you know, the wrestling of where Darren Caldwell wants to take the fight. I mean, AJ McKee, I mean, he's that newer MMA fighter where it's they're good in every aspect of the game, whether it's wrestling, jiu-jitsu, you know, stand up. I mean, that to me is, you know, one of those fights that, you know, just like I said with Paige and Larkin, you tell me McKee and Caldwell are fighting, I'm going to go out of my way to watch them fight live.
I'm gonna go out of my way and watch them fight live, and you know, that fight, just I can't wait for it to happen. I mean, I just can't wait until Bellator comes back. There are so many talented fighters. I mean, we have all those fights that we have on the books, but you know, there are fighters that I just want to see fight, bro. Like, I can't wait to see Patty Mix fight again. I want to see that dude fight again. I want to see in middleweight, Yadislav Amosov, obviously the women champions, Cyborg, and Ali Malay. I want to see what happens to Adam Borax coming off that loss, man. There are so many fighters who didn't even have fights booked, where it's just so crazy that we haven't seen them fight lately. And it's crazy that we don't even have a fight on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing, and I was thinking about this the other day, where I was going, if you are about to be a free agent or are currently a free agent, the fact that Bellator's not putting on shows, does that affect your decision or whether or not you would sign with a promotion not named the UFC?
Yeah, I think so, because of it. It's pretty simple. One place is putting on shows and the rest aren't. And I know Combate America has announced that they're coming back, and I'm sure that's nice and whatnot. But, you know, the ability to know that as long as things don't get crazier, the promotion is going to run an event every single week and you're going to have an opportunity to fight. Like, you know, if you want to fight, you can get a lot of bookings for the UFC. I mean, they are filling out these fight cards and they're struggling. So it's a simple math here. One promotion's offering fights, the other isn't. That's going to impact decisions like that.
Like, I think about someone like a Liz Carmouche. I wonder if at all she regrets her decision.
I think there's a possibility in that, just because she would have probably fought already. I mean, for fighters, you must be going crazy amidst this pandemic, where it feels like you're training for the sake of training. Like, there's no goal. And that'd be an interesting conversation to have with the fighter in Bellator. And you know, I applaud Bellator for their initial stance. You know, this is a crazy situation, but it seems like you would imagine that the talent would be quite restless and they would not, they just want to compete. And I applaud how Scott Coker initially done this, but now it's time for him, I believe, to pivot and start figuring out a plan to get this product back on TV and get fighters some fights.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wonder how much with Bellator is it this question of, with how many international fighters they have, can they get them to the United States? Can they do shows somewhere over in Europe with these fighters? I mean, that's a big question. Like, you look at, you know, we talked about Lima Musasi as our number one fight. Can you get Gegard Mousasi to the United States?
He has to be able to. I mean, there's so many players that are going to come back to the United States that are in the NHL that are international right now, that there's got to be a possibility. It might be expensive. Maybe he can talk to the NHL and try and get those guys on those same flights, but the possibility has to be there. It's just the question is the price point for getting these guys over here. And it's like, do we just get them all over here right now and they got to train in America? Because, you know, you can't be doing it for every single fight card.
Well, I think the key with that would be is you'd have to give these guys a date of when they would fight, because, you know, obviously they'd have to do the housing aspect of everything. I mean, there's so much kind of put in there. I mean, I hope we can see Bellator run some fight cards, just because I want to see those guys be able to make some money.
Yeah, yeah. You want to see them make some money. And it's not just the money, bro. Like, it's like the purpose of life. It gives your life purpose to compete. These are athletes. I mean, a fighter like Chris Cyborg isn't getting any younger. She's in her prime, post prime, 34 years old. She's been battle tested. It's time to get Cyborg in that cage, you know. Fedor, the retirement tour. I mean, this dude, you know, these older fighters aren't getting any younger by the day.
No, I mean, that's the thing with Fedor, is who you're gonna match him up against.
I don't know, bro. I literally, that's a good question. I mean, is there anyone who you can look at? Mike Tyson? Is that who it is? Mike Tyson?
I'd watch.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be so stupid. Yeah, I'd watch is the perfect answer.
Yeah, I think that is something to say. Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's something for that. But I will say this. So the UFC card this weekend, Daniel, good thing we talked about this card later on in the show. So I'm going to give you a little breaking news as we do this show, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
We got a fight change.
All right, what fight has changed?
Sean Woodson has a new opponent.
Wow, who's he got?
He is going to be taking on Julian Arosa. Kyle Nelson. And first off, give a little credit here to Neil Davidson, who I believe Neil works for the Canadian Press, tweeted about an hour ago, unfortunate news for Canadian Kyle Nelson, who's off this weekend's UFC card in Las Vegas. He did not get his visa in time for his short notice fight, so Julian Arosa steps in to take on Sean Woodson on Saturday. And I have had people, let's just say, as we were talking here, I was texting away, and yes, I've just had that news confirmed. He has taken on Julian Arosa.
Wow, that's an interesting opportunity for Arosa. I had not realized that this man has not fought since over a year. He hasn't fought since May 2019, which was a knockout loss to Julio Arce. That's it's been a year off for Julian, and that's tough situation where it's like you're taking the fight. It's on short notice. It's your first fight in over a year, and you're taking on Woodson. I mean, undefeated. You had an opportunity to talk to Sean Woodson. This dude is a pretty lanky guy for this weight class. Really tall dude, and he's got a world of potential. That's that sets up well for Woodson. For Julian Arosa, I think. I mean, he's taking a fight where he's going to be a massive underdog.
You know, for Sean Woodson, I mean, I would imagine this is a fight that will stay up on the feet, which, you know, when I spoke to Sean a couple weeks ago, you know, he felt that that's what Kyle's game plan was going to be. He's like, but I'm going to shut down all these takedowns. I'm going to keep it on the feet. I'm going to beat him up on the feet. When we talk about, and we'll talk about the main event shortly, because the main event is obviously the reason that everyone is tuning in. It's an awesome main event between Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker. But when you think about the top three fights outside of the main event, and I came up with, and it's, I mean, look, it's, there's not, I think, a great number one, great number two, great number three pick. There's not one that you immediately just say, okay, that's it. I'll just rank them my one through three, and I'll get yours. My number one would be Pena versus Worthy. Two, Brandon Alvarez, Kyle Daukaus. Of course, Kyle Daukaus making his UFC debut. He is, you know, stepping up and taking on, replacing Ian Heinisch, who pulled out of the event. And then my number three, I'll go with a fight that was booked literally 7 days ago or 6 days ago. Jordan Griffin versus Yusuf Zalal.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, this fight card sucks, for reals. Great main event, one of the better main events they've put on for a while. But this fight card, much respect to all the fighters, it's just it doesn't have a lot of great side dishes on the main card. It just doesn't. And that's sad, but I'm looking forward to this fight card because I love MMA, and I love all these fighters, and I hope they have success. But these fights aren't particularly compelling, but I will give you my top three outside the main event. My number one fight, we had the same one, Luis Pena and Kama Worthy. Both these guys, incredibly exciting and also pretty dang talented. My number two fight is going to be Mike Perry, Mickey Gall, just because Mike Perry is someone who is a part of that can't miss TV category. And my number three fight to look forward to is Jin Yu Frey and Kay Hansen. And a big part of this is in the women's strawweight division. Anytime the UFC signs a fighter who was born to is 20 years old, you have my attention. So you have my attention with Kay Hansen, a 20-year-old fighter in the women's strawweight division, you know, born August 1999. You have my attention. I'm interested in what's going to happen with this young one.
Bro, I graduated high school in May 2000.
Yeah, yeah. When the UFC starts signing fighters like Kay, who were like in middle school when I was a senior in high school, I'm starting to cry inside.
Yeah, I mean, and there's five fighters on this fight card making their UFC debut. You know, I look at Kyle Daukaus, a guy that we saw in the Contender Series, didn't get the contract. Now he gets this opportunity. You know, outside of that, I look at. And I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Ramajaj. I probably butcher the hell out of his name. He trains out of Fortis. You tell me a guy trains out of Fortis, I'm interested. You got me intrigued.
Well, bro, that fight's a good one because on the other side of the equation is Takashi Sato. And dude, Sato is like entertaining as hell. I mean, think about this. Let me just double check here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I believe it's either 8 or 9 consecutive fights with Sato have ended in finish. Most of them he's won, most of them in pancrease. So with the guy on the other side of Ramiz Brahimash, you have a guy who is nothing but action.
Yeah, no, I'm it's, you know, I mean, there's a lot of fights on this fight card, but I mean, look, it's all about the main event. That's the reason we're tuning in on Saturday night. Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. You know, obviously this is a huge opportunity for Dan Hooker. I mean, he's coming off that win against Paul Felder. And I was thinking about this earlier today, Daniel. If Dan Hooker wins, is Dan Hooker about to call out Conor McGregor?
It'd be a smart move. I don't know if Conor might come out of retirement for Hooker. I don't know if that's the guy. He'll come out of retirement. But if Dan Hooker wins, he theoretically deserves a title opportunity. You know, he deserves it after Gaethje and Nurmagomedov fight if Conor's quote unquote retired.
He puts himself right there. I mean, but you know, the question I think ultimately is yeah, obviously Dustin has proven a lot. And how does he bounce back from the Khabib loss?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've seen him fight. I mean, he went from the high of his career, winning that interim title against Holloway versus just a tough, tough loss that did nothing but, you know, reinforce how great Nurmagomedov was. I mean, Poirier has established himself as a premier talent in the lightweight division. Incredibly, incredibly talented and lethal. A fighter with wins over Holloway and Alvarez and Gaethje and Pettis. I mean, that's a murderer's row of lightweights. So Poirier is looking to rebound here. He is the favorite, according to a lot of, you know, you look at Five Dimes, he's at -220. You look at Bookmaker, -217 as we speak, and I'm getting this off bestfightodds.com. So he is the favorite here, but my pick is Dan Hooker. And the reason why is, I mean, I just watched this dude strike and I'm so impressed, bro. Dan Hooker's stand up is different to me than most guys. I just watch him strike and I'm like, he's just seeing the game differently. His performance against Paul Felder was a great fight. It was a close fight that Paul Felder could have won a decision. That raises some concerns, but I still think Hooker's going to be able to outpoint Poirier on the feet.
I like Dustin Poirier in this spot. I just think that I think the wide range of skills, I believe I'd be interested to see if he does try to get this fight to the ground and try to, you know, not make this a kickboxing matchup, not make this a fight range, even though I know that he loves the strikes. But yeah, I would say I do believe it is a coin flip type fight.
Yeah, yeah. The point you made about the wide range of skills is why I have real trepidation to pick Dan Hooker. When I think of Poirier's skills, I mean, it's like he's just an absolute grinder, bro. Like in terms of not the stereotypical wrestling grinder, but just the typical, like, things get ugly, I like his chances. Things that are in transition, I like his ability to lock on a submission. Things are going haywire, I like his ability to land an elbow and knock a dude out. I like his ground and pound. I think he's lethal. And that's why I really love Poirier, is he ties together so many aspects of the game. And also he does it in a very exciting way. And that's why I have real trepidation. It's just a matter of the frame of Hooker. It's just his ability to utilize distance, utilize his hand-eye coordination to tag his opponent and get out of the way. I mean, the victory over Gilbert Burns he had is just so ingrained in my mind. Obviously, he followed that up by losing to Edson Barboza. But that win over Burns was so impressive, and it's obviously gotten more impressive as Burns has dominated the welterweight division. So again, I have real trepidation, because if you're saying who's better in this aspect of the game, who's better in this aspect of the game, more often than not, I'm actually going to checkmark Poirier. But because the fight starts out on the feet, I think Poirier is going to get sucked into that aspect of the fight. That's why I think Hooker will win this decision.
By the way, you mentioned about Gilbert Burns, and they had the UFC 251 promo play during the Fight Night card last weekend. Dana White is tempting the MMA gods, bro.
I know. Like, are you kidding me? Bro, this year has been so, so, so cursed. And to go out there with that, it's like, are you kidding me?
You are tempting for the MMA gods to give a crap ton of fighters COVID.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's making himself seem like he's like, it's annoying, actually. It's really annoying. He's making himself seem like he's like Elon Musk mixed with like Jesus Christ mixed with like Conan the Barbarian, like the ultimate hero who has saved the world from coronavirus. Like screw you, bro.
And the first like 30, 45 seconds, like I felt like I was watching a propaganda video of basically saying, look how great Dana White is. And look, you got to give Dana White a lot of credit for what he's done. But I'm sitting there watching this video going, oh, man, you know the MMA gods. You know how they do things. And I'm sitting there going, no, don't tempt these gods. Because, like, I mean, look, 251 is a very – it's a great fight card lineup. Let's call it what it is. You know, you don't have the – there's not that huge drawing power on the card. But – it's top to bottom. It's going to be an excellent pay-per-view lineup.
Yeah. By the way, when they shot this promo, do you think they shot it at Fight Island or did they shoot it at Random Beach? Are they already, all the fighters already there?
No. It's, look, at the end of the day, it's not, it's just like they, it's on Yas Island where they've done shows before.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like, they're asking for people to get this freaking disease and somebody to do a parody where they redo this video, but they have a Joe Rogan experience talking, where Joe Rogan talks about how masks aren't good and all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, like, they are tempting the gods. I hope it doesn't happen. I hope things go well. They put together a damn good card for UFC 251, but yes, it's like, bro, don't pretend like you're, like, some saint. You know, these fight cards have been great, but, bro, like... the coronavirus in this country is like one of those things where, like, it hasn't gotten better. It's probably gotten worse. But because it's been going on for so long, like, we've just kind of ignored it. Like, that is our new approach, bro. It reminds me, like, we have taken my high school approach to clean my room and applied it to a pandemic. We're just like, I'm tired of it. It might be real, but, dude, I just want to watch sports. Like, that has been our approach. That has been the approach. And, yeah, thankfully... like, knock on wood, bro, like, the UFC has been pretty lucky and fortunate, but I mean, when you read all these stories about all of these college football programs that brought all the kids down, and you have, like, so many kids at Texas and LSU and Clemson get the disease, it's like, the UFC has been real fortunate.
I will say this, and I've told a couple people in the industry this, like, if there's ever a fighter that wants to, that, you know, comes down with COVID-19 and wants to have, like, an informational talk about how everything went for them, I'm here to talk. I would not to, like, I don't know the way to say this, not trying to cast a negative light on it, but I would just be interested to talk to a fighter to kind of talk about the whole process for them.
I mean, here's a question we will never know the answer to. Is there a fighter who fought at a UFC card that we don't know about that contracted the disease? That's an interesting question. And I think the answer is no. But I believe the UFC has the incentive to make sure that answer is no.
I hope the answer is no, Daniel. That's the way I would preface that. But also, as a fighter, why would you admit it?
Well, this is what I would do if I got it, bro. If I got the disease, I'd be like, Dana, I need a bonus. Or else I'm going to, you know, the MMA media. Cough, cough. I need some more cheddar in my paycheck because the incentive, like, is the incentive in general. And, you know, I'm kind of joking when I say all this because it's more like the incentive when you get the disease is to just shut up and stay in your room for a while and just come out whenever you don't have a disease. Because, like, I feel like once you get it, bro, like, you get casted as, like, I mean, if my friend got the COVID virus, I don't think I would touch him for, like, a year. Not that I'm, like, touching my friend all the time, but, like, I don't know if I would invite him over to watch the UFC even after he tested negative. It's like, this disease is very much like a scarlet letter, right? Like, damn. Like, I wonder what's going on with Jacare right now and whatnot. But I'm sure we would know about it, but it's just, it's like one of those stories that would get out of hand for the UFC if it got out.
Yeah, that was one of the things that what Dana was asked about Jacare during the press conference last week, and he said he didn't have, you know, an update. I'm sitting there going, man, you haven't, like, picked up the phone and called Jacare? See how he's doing?
Mm-hmm. You would think that if a fighter tests positive, you would check up on him every 7 days and see if he got tested again. I don't know if Jacare's tweeted about it. But yeah, it's like, it's been a while now. You would think he's gotten past the illness. There are people, there are cases of those who have the disease for longer than 14 days. So I'm pretty sure he's not one of them, but I have no idea. And that's been a while now since did he test positive for COVID-19? Now that I'm thinking about it, did he test positive or was he just around someone?
No, I think he tested positive, as I
yeah.
recall.
Yeah, I think he
but
did.
But he was around, like, so. Like,
yeah, he did.
Here locally, I was listening in on the county commissioner's Zoom call that they had, and they were kind of talking about it. And I'll be honest with you, prior to that call, I knew what was going on, but I never really took a deep dive into it. So it was really fascinating to hear the doctors kind of talk about it. And like they were talking about here in Tampa about, you know, how it's much more younger people. But then like it makes me think of like, you know, if everyone in your town got tested, how many people and say they took the regular COVID test plus the antibody test to show whether you had it before, how many people would the antibody test show they had it, but they had no sense? Because like, I don't know if you saw the video where D.L. Hughley, the comedian, you know, passed out a show in Nashville. You know, he had no idea he had COVID, and he had dehydration. He goes to the hospital, and they do him a COVID test, and they find out he had COVID, and he had no idea. I mean, I think that's the scary thing that we all kind of deal with, is like this, you may not show any signs that you have it.
Yeah, and bro, it's one of those situations also where there's so many questions that we have no answers to. Like, I usually, my thoughts in terms of educating myself is usually on Sundays, I get a newsletter that's like called the Sunday Long Read, and they have a section where they just have the best coronavirus articles that are long form. And that's when I'll take some time and dig into it. And so much of the information I don't retain because I'm not a scientist and whatnot. But in addition to that, I'll read, you know, some articles in the New York Times and Washington Post and whatnot. And so that's my general way of obtaining information. And it's like, damn, there's so much we don't know about this disease. It's like, dude, like, even like when you Google a simple question, like, can you get coronavirus a second time? You know, the answer,
that's a good question.
You know, when I type it in Google, which is how we answer questions, it says, as of yet, we are unsure of the nature of human immunity to coronavirus. That's what it says, according to, I believe it's Penn State's website. Which is it's their Institute of Life Sciences. So it's very scary because in so much of life, Jason, we know things about it. This has been one of those rare diseases where we're learning this on the fly. And that's a very relevant question because that coincides with the point you brought up. I feel like a lot of people in our towns that test positive for antibodies. But what if we could just get the damn thing again? Like, damn, bro, that would be pretty nuts. But again, that's just me being like, damn, like, that's a possibility. Maybe, hopefully not. But I think if we as people respect this disease and respect what we don't know, I think we'll be better off. But to be frank with you, I think the way our society is, Jason, how polarized it is, I think the test of how we deal with a pandemic, I think we failed that one pretty dramatically. I think we did, bro. But, you know, that's all we can do.
I told somebody yesterday, I was like, man, with what's going on here in Tampa, I'm like, I wonder if we're talking about a 24-hour curfew at some point, the way the positive tests keep rising.
Yeah, this is such a huge problem, bro, because you do the 24-hour curfew, people's money will get affected. I mean, they just got back into the swing of things, and to take away that income sucks so bad for these companies, but it might be necessary. And like, you know, the economic part of it is such a big part, and the economic desire has killed people. You know, I read an article, I want to say it was in the New York Times, that it was a reporter who went to Mexico, and he's a reporter there in Mexico City, I believe. But this food market where these poor individuals, they have to go and they got to sell tomatoes because that's all they know how to do. That's their life, just sell tomatoes, make a little bit of money, and bring it back. And when they feel sick, they go and they continue to work and they infect others. And so many people in this marketplace, a huge marketplace, that have passed away. It's so sad, but there are these cultures and these realities of people, so many of us in this country, who are living paycheck to paycheck to paycheck, and that economic need for money has probably killed people because they're like, damn, I need to go to work. And maybe that person who needed to go to work didn't die, but whoever they gave it to could have died. You know, I go to bed every night and I'm scared for my grandmother, you know, and it's unfortunate. But I mean, I just think it really showed the negativity, the problem of our country. And I'm not getting political in terms of I'm not picking a side here. I just believe because we are so polarized, like I'm more looking at the structure of our country and I'm just like, damn, we can absolutely do better in terms of like communicating with everyone. Because like, you know, I get why there's disdain on both sides, but it's just like, you know, I believe strongly in this country. And I think we've certainly failed a lot of tests this year. And I'm very optimistic about our future, Jason. But damn, I've just been feeling real down in the dumps lately.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I think about just from a UFC aspect, and especially with all these shows at the Apex, is like, so if someone tests positive, whether a fighter, cornerman, you know, someone working in the event, whatnot, like, do you have to like trace where do they go? Do they go somewhere in the PI? I mean, that to me is something to kind of sit there and think about. And, you know, and I just, you know, I mean, I think we all have to kind of make these personal decisions. And, you know, because it makes me think of they were on this county commission call yesterday. They were talking about how a business owner of like 40 years had to basically close their shop up because one of their employees tested positive and said that in reality, it's not just, you know, closing up shop for 3-4 days. It's closing up your shop 2-3, even as many as 4 weeks. And that's why I kind of went from a UFC aspect is I don't know the answer to the question, but it's more of, I wonder what protocols are in place for if a, you know, like last week it came out, Billy Q tested positive. You know, where did Billy go in the PI, and did they shut off that area of the PI?
That's a great question, and that's necessary. I think that social tracing is so important, and just to parlay the point you brought up, and to put that together with something you said way earlier in the podcast, which is Dana White like dismissing the idea of fans. I'm glad he did that, because I just wanted to reference something I read in this past week, which was it's on this website called vtdigger.org, excuse me. It's like a Vermont paper or a digital outlet. And it's a reminder of how this disease can spread or whatever. It traced a March 10th University of Vermont basketball game. And during this game, this was a super spreader event. They did all the contract chasing. During this game, 20 people who attended the game tested positive for COVID-19, according to their survey. An additional 34 people said they experienced flu-like symptoms. 3 people who attended that game with a positive test later died of the virus. That's just one college basketball game, and they even have like a graph where it shows where people sat and how it spread. It was nuts, the work they did. It was like one side of the court by the concession stand. You just see boom, 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 all these dots of how they spread. You know, one person complaining of coughing. So the spreading is there, and it's like, you know, you have somebody who works in an area, and maybe all their germs are just all over the area, and then the next person comes and gets it. I mean, that's one of those things I'm concerned about when I go to a convenience store. I do a really good job of social distancing right now, but when I go to a convenience store and I use the debit card deal, I'm mindful of like not putting my hands back on my mouth, but sometimes I make that mistake, and I do. And it's just so scary to think about, but you know, that's what we got to think about.
Yeah. You know, you think about it all the time. Like, and it's always like, if you're at the store and you got to like itch your face, you feel like you can't itch your face.
Yeah. And again, it's something we laugh about here. The normal sneezing, the normal coughing, the normal headaches and sore throats we go through in everyday life now become coronavirus. You self-diagnose yourself for a very anxious hour. You're like, Jesus, I got COVID-19, but it's just normal. Like that's just what would have happened anyway. And it's like the COVID-19 forever changed having allergies for me, forever changed having issues with my sinuses, because every time I'm like, geez Louise, you know, I give myself the virus, and I have never been tested for it. So who knows, maybe I've had it, but I doubt it. But yeah, I mean, geez, our life has changed forever.
And you feel like if you cough in public, everyone's going to look at you.
You feel like you literally broke the law is what it feels like. you know.
Dude, like, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, that's why I would say, like, if you wanted, if you were doing a stare down for your fight, cough on the dude.
That's awful. That's awful. Yeah, that's an awful fight. That should be illegal in the rules right now. I mean, you start coughing on a guy, even though you're grappling in the middle of a fight, you might tap out. But
dude, that that could be like a, your new strategy in a fight. If you're getting up beat up bad on the ground, cough.
Sneeze. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Bro, how many fighters like, whoa? Actually, probably fighters wouldn't care. Hey, dude, probably, like, whatever.
Yeah, due to the wrong fighter, he'd get pissed off and knock you upside the head and put you to Dream Street.
Oh, man. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to watching the fights on Saturday, mainly for the main event. And I do like the little earlier start time. So the main event will start around 10:30 p.m. each time. So looking forward to it. Of course, be sure to subscribe, rate, review this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio. So wherever you get your podcast, the MMA Report podcast is there. Of course, be sure to give myself a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Daniel's at Daniel Galvan DGG. So let's go wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a place for my head quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week, we're talking to pro wrestler and actor Aaron Stevens, the artist formerly known as Damian Sandow from the WWE.
What am I doing? I was internalizing everything. And, you know, I've actually never disclosed this on an interview before, but I was at a point where I had such a low opinion of myself. You know, I had pushed people closest to me and was pushing them away. And it was not because I didn't love them. It was because I didn't think enough of myself. You know, it was like, I don't deserve anyone. I'm this, I'm that, I'm nothing. Because I had equated everything, every bit of my existence with who I was or how someone was treating me. And that to me, you know, that's, I don't believe in regrets in life. But I think if we don't learn from the times when we have been less than what we could have been, you know, and it took me years. It took me years to, you know, I hopped into acting and I walked away from wrestling completely. I just said, I can't deal with this anymore. It was such a bad taste in my mouth. And, you know, that wasn't the best decision because there was, I left no room for healing, you know, in terms of that. I don't want to call it a wound, but
you couldn't get you never found your closure.
No, I didn't. And, you know, as I kind of learned to be better with myself, to forgive, you know, forgive myself, which was the hardest thing. And, you know, I've had some great opportunities, you know, some acting roles started coming up. And then, you know, Billy Corgan, you know, the guy from the Smashing Pumpkins is who was a buddy of mine, you know, started his league. And I went there and it was so strange, like how I started to get this closure, but at the same time, like reignite my love for what this truly is.
A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and Jerry P. Tuck can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.